This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 5 of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. My name is Tyler Fornes, and with me today is Fred Moreland, my co-host. How are the home renovations coming?
They are nearly done, and thank God for that. I am so tired of this nonsense, but everything's going well on that front. How about these Vikings?
Oh my gosh, they are trying to kill me, Fred. They are literally trying to kill me with how they're playing the game of football, but somehow they're 4-1, so it's hard to truly complain.
Don't count yourself out like that. There's plenty of ways to complain even when your team's good. Take, for example, my Cleveland Guardians baseball fandom and the fact that I had to sit to the, was it the 15th inning the other day for that never-ending playoff series? So that was rough, man.
Oh, yeah, that is a
scoreless game into almost a second game of baseball. Just, yeah, 15 innings.
Hey, you know what? At least they did not have the ghost runner, and that walk-off was a true walk-off. We'll take that as a win. But let's jump into the AEW, because, Fred, we have a lot to talk about, and it's all wrestling war-related, which is awesome stuff. Jon Moxley officially signed a 5-year extension that was announced over the weekend, and what was really funny about it is everybody who announced it with the press release had the exact same tweet, which I found incredible that he had signed an extension with AEW and that include mentorship and coaching responsibilities. Just not even trying to make it your own. It's the company line stuff. And I found it really funny.
Well, you know, you got to appreciate, you know, the value of time and why reword something when you can just not, right? So
they're just a bunch of Adam Schefters, all of them.
Sources are reporting exactly this thing that this press release says. yeah, man, Jon Moxley has been, I would argue, and granted there's some injury here, you could probably be like Hangman Page or Kenny Omega, but Moxley has been the heart and soul of this company since basically day one. He is so talented and just has been able to really spread his wings in AEW and just be exactly what he is, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it's great. I mean, he has just represented what this company is, the goods of it. Just constantly having great matches, great promos, just perfect character. So, you know, if I was like, this is a situation where you could have just done a lifetime contract and everyone would have been happy. He's just perfect in the spot.
He really is. And you can just tell compared to his time in WWE that he is happy, because the body language is just significantly different. And then this came from Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer. And I quote, "I think the key to all of this is, you know, he signed a 5-year deal. So as far as why so long, I think the answer was that he just felt he's not going to WWE. He doesn't want to go to WWE, doesn't want to put on of wanting to go to WWE and play both sides to get more money. He doesn't want people speculating that he's going to WWE. He wants all speculation over, and he's with AEW for 5 more years. I know at some point he discussed, I don't know how seriously, but just being a free agent and doing that as opposed to signing a new deal." Now, I think what's really interesting about all this is, one, Dave's writing. If you don't understand it, this is the amount of times that he basically says the same thing. That's just Dave-isms.
That's how it works, baby.
It really does. But the biggest thing to me came at the end is that he thought about doing a free agent deal, which means he could do GCW, he could do New Japan, and he could do all those things whenever he wanted. So my guess is that he was able to get something in his contract where he was able to still do all that freelancing stuff and some mutual agreement with Tony Khan that, hey, I'm still going to be AEW core, but I can still get my wrestling bug elsewhere, which honestly, I don't care if he ever does GCW again, but New Japan, you know, maybe going and doing a shot in like a AAA or CMLL or doing a Northeast Indie, you know, some of like the really cool stuff, like what he had Didn't he have a match against Speedball in like Warrior Wrestling?
I think he did, and I think that was excellent. So.
Stuff like that absolutely rocks, and I hope he gets a chance to do more of it, because it's not always something you can do within the context of AEW canon, considering you have to advance storylines. I mean, you can do one-offs. He did one with Mance Warner, which was awesome, but you can't always do that considering he's the champion and you have to keep progressing storylines. And because of those aspects, I love that he's still going to be able to go out in theory and be able to have these one-off matches that are just really cool. And who cares if he wins them? He's going to win all of them, except he had to drop the GCW title to Nick Gage, which I thought, we'll talk about that later. I thought they did a really nice job of making that happen. But seeing these cool kind of quote-unquote dream matches, I think was a really nice touch for him to be able to continue to do that.
Yeah, and I think it really fits into not just what he wants to do, but also helps, I think, AEW's role in the world of wrestling, where they are kind of the cool promotion in the sense that they will work with other companies in a very public way. And I think that is beneficial to the company itself. Now, I know that Meltzer said rather offhandedly, so it was really hard to tell if it was a report or speculation on his part. So, giant asterisk here. But he made it sound like he thinks that Moxley will not be working with GCW again, at least in the short term. I think AEW is, if you go back to the career of Marco Stunt, who was doing okay in AEW, is like, you know, the mascot, essentially, of Jungle Express. And then he did a dildo death match with Effie, or whatever the exact gimmick was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he may have also got concussed in that match, and that was essentially it for him in AEW, even beyond recovering from the concussion. So I think that I think Tony Khan may not be too fond of his people going to GCW, but that'll be something to watch, see exactly how it plays out moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we know that Jon Moxley is completely different from Marco Stunt, but the core concept of GCW and an AEW talent continuing to go over there does have some credence. Speaking of AEW talent, Andrade decided that he wanted to try and get fired. So he started a fight with Sammy Guevara. He was told on Tuesday that he would not get fired if he threw punches. They had security prepped to keep them apart. It didn't work. Multiple sources talked to Dave Meltzer. Three of them said the same thing, and one was almost identical in saying that Andrade started the fight and was the one that threw punches, and Sammy did not. Apparently, according to one of those Meltzer sources, Andrade hid in the hallway and ambushed Sammy. He did it anyway to try and get fired. And what really is intriguing about this whole thing is that this is a wrestling war. And we saw stuff similar, but not too similar with this, with guys like Jeff Jarrett in the 90s and jumping back and forth and trying to just get as much money as I can, which is awesome. More of this should happen in pro wrestling. These guys should try and make as much money, and it makes things more interesting. But doing it in this way, knowing that you want out of the company and intentionally trying to start a fight with a guy who has had his own issues within and outside of the company as far as public perception and just general immaturity. This was stupid. Like, there's no redeeming quality to this, except it makes Andrade look like the biggest asshole. And somehow, throughout all this, Roosh's hands are clean, and he's a squeaky clean babyface in the locker room. Like, you can't make this up.
I love this ridiculous industry. Two of my favorite things that just did little side notes on this on Twitter was, one, Andrade bouncing around last week, even before all the Sammy stuff broke out, just tweeting, you know, his little hints about how he wants out, and then just halfway through just going, "Hey, Roosh, I'm retweeting you getting a job. Congratulations." In the place that I want to leave. After all this happened, Ricky Starks and MJF were talking a little trash to each other on Twitter. Seemed like probably in good fun, but who knows these days. And Eddie Kingston just replied to them and said, "Guys, playoff baseball and college football is on. Chill." So, I don't know. It's just a very ridiculous kind of situation all around. Meltzer has hinted, after this happened, he hinted that people that were under contract with WWE but wanted out, back before AEW was around, in the early days of it, of trying to come up with ridiculous ways of getting fired. I know one he's mentioned is them failing drug tests on purpose. I don't know that anyone actually did that. But of course, he always told them that this isn't going to work. You're not going to actually get fired for this. And, you know, it's a shame that Andrade didn't reach out to his father-in-law, sometimes buddy, and have that talk. There's no way that Tony Khan's going to release Andrade anytime soon if he can help it.
Yeah. And the line that he said, I cannot remember what podcast it was on. He was doing an interview, and you can kind of tell where the gears in his head are turning, because he's like, I have only had a problem with a wrestler that I'm not going to name.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say his name, Sammy Guevara. He knew what he was doing, and it was very calculated and just awful stuff. Obviously, Guevara countered on social media, so he was still somewhat complicit in this. And there were some people in the back that were upset that he ended up getting the win in the main event. But I'll tell you, when you watch that match on Dynamite and you felt the heat in the building, that was heat. That wasn't, I hate you, go away heat. It was, I hate your guts and want to see you get your ass absolutely brutalized heat. And that is something that Guevara is leaning into really well and can definitely keep this promotion hot as we continue to move forward.
Oh, yeah. Sammy is just a real, he's naturally a total heel, just a real shit stain of a person on screen. And I don't want to get too much into like his personal life because I don't know him or anything, but he does have a habit of getting himself into situations that he should not be in, and yet he still does it. If he had stayed off Twitter, it probably would have helped this not happen. But honestly, when someone decides they want to fight, you can have as much security as you want. There's going to be something happening with them. Once you've set your mind to it, there will be an event of some sort.
Yeah, this is definitely not the end of the road as far as any kind of drama with either Andrade or Sammy Guevara, or potentially between the two. We do know that Sammy and Eddie Kingston ended up squashing their drama with a handshake in the back, which always a good sign to see adults figure it out, especially wrestlers who are just, they're wired up completely differently than the rest of us. But as a result of this, the match between 10 or Preston Vance versus Andrade, which was Mask versus Career, ended up getting canceled for Rampage. And they modified that to a Dark Order versus Death Triangle Trios match, which main evented the live Rampage. And I wonder if we're going to end up getting this match at some point down the line.
Honestly, I don't care if they do, because they had not really done a good job of building it. So, frankly, I think this is kind of a blessing in disguise with regards to the booking of the Mask versus Career match. I think that if you're going to have a Mask match, you should at least make it mean something, right? And with 10 largely being on the sidelines this year, at least as far as television is concerned, I don't see where you've really done much to build up that match, with specifically that stipulation for it. So I think it's to their benefit that it didn't happen.
No, it absolutely was to their benefit. Other news. Let's talk about the rating here for Dynamite. Fred.
Before we jump to the rating, I want to ask you, what would you do with Andrade now if you were Tony Khan?
I would grant him a conditional release where he could wrestle wherever he wanted except WWE. Get him out of my locker room. Let him do whatever he wants, but he can't go to WWE until his contract's finished.
I would probably not do that. What I would do is I would just freeze his contract, at least for quite a while, because, you know, the complaint would be, well, you're wasting money. The amount of money that a contract that Andrade would be making is minimal to Tony Khan. Like, if let's say that Andrade is getting a cool million, just to say that, right?
A flat number makes it easier.
Yeah. And what is the Khan family worth?
$8 billion.
$8 billion. Let's just do a little math here, make sure I got enough numbers.
It's worth 8,000th of their net worth.
Yeah. Yeah, that is less than 0.01%, or just over 0.01%. They could take that hit if they want to. I hear like Meltzer and others will be like, well, you can't just waste that money. man, when you're that rich, you can. Like, that's just the fact. Like, you hear about, like, these sports teams that'll, like, Albert Pujols before his late season resurgence. Like, when he was with the Angels, he was so bad, they're like, well, we'll just pay you $30 million a year to go away so we can have the roster spot for someone that can hopefully play. Like, that's just part of the doing the business.
It 100% is. Whatever you do with Andrade, it just feels like his time in the locker room is probably minimal at this point. And he kind of did it to himself. And it's really frustrating because this is a guy who is incredibly talented, who can have great matches with all these wrestlers in AEW, especially how many work rate guys are here. And he's just, his start in AEW got a little derailed by the fact that he was paired with Vicky Guerrero, which, outside of the fact that they are both Spanish and heritage, made zero sense. And now he's just kind of derailed his whole career in the company just because of attitude issues. Like, look, I get it. Triple H is in power and nobody could have predicted it. But at the end of the day, you made a commitment. And if they're not willing to let you out of it, you need to honor it and be a professional.
Yeah, it's very disappointing what he did and specifically how he decided to try to accomplish it. I mean, honestly, just don't show up to work if you'd rather do that. And I think that probably work out better for him. You know, if you want to jump, you want to jump, and that makes sense. But I feel like that it's an oversimplification when people say, well, just don't sign the contract because the alternative is not really getting paid well for a while. And that's not very appetizing. But I think that, you know, once you do sign a 5-year contract, you have to have some realism about it. And it's not like he was being used super well by Tony Khan, but at the same time, he was getting, you know, like a semi push, you know, like a solid mid card kind of guy level deal. And if, you know, you're so unhappy about that, you want to jump immediately to WWE, I'm not really sure that you're going to get the kind of push there either, at least long term. If he were to have already jumped over, I'm not sure what Andrade at the tail end of 2023 looks like. Just, you know, but that's part of it. I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see. You know, there's always the possibility that they'll be able to smooth this over, I guess, but I'm not really holding my breath on it.
Yeah, I'm not either. We'll just kind of see how it continues to play out. If he does what Sammy and Kingston did and just kind of ends up burying the hatchet and tries to move forward with a positive light, or if he just continues to be a train wreck, we'll find out. This Dynamite rating, Fred, both good and I guess it's nothing's really bad. 1.038 million viewers, 0.33 in the 18 to 49, down a smidge. Number two on cable, just behind The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Most importantly, the season finale, because those two have kind of flip-flopped between one and two for the majority of the summer. Honestly, you wish the 18 to 49 was a little higher, but they're consistently getting over a million viewers, which I think is a net positive.
Yeah, that's a nice step to finally be able to reach consistently. So, you know, a lot of the people that are particularly bothered by all the backstage drama that's been going on with them, and let's be clear, that's not desirable. You don't want the CM Punk situation. You don't want the Andrade situation. But, you know, even with that, they're doing quite well right now. It does feel like they are not as hot as they once were, but their numbers are still quite solid. So I think that they can't be anything but happy with that TV rating.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously last week was an aberration, finishing ninth on the night, but almost everything was Weather Channel related. And then one of those was Tucker Carlson, who I did not watch the Tucker Carlson show last Wednesday, but I can almost guarantee you that it was weather related because that was the big story throughout the course of America. Honestly, consistent rating. So nothing really to look at there. Let's talk about Saraya, Fred, because she apparently is cleared. She got physical in the ring after the match on Wednesday. Britt Baker said earlier in the show that she wasn't cleared, kind of poking fun at her. And AEW has done everything to tell you that she's cleared without actually saying that she's cleared. So until they officially announce it, I think we can assume that she is. But how do you think that they've done promoting her in that sense and continuing the storyline of we really don't know, kind of leaving everybody in limbo? It's very odd.
You know, I thought it was odd when last week they didn't really advance it. Instead, they just had the whole terrible, terrible segment. You know, the week before, I guess I should say. But on this past time, I felt like they did pretty well. They kind of put her on the back burner a little bit and let the rest of the division stand out, which was a smart move, particularly considering how she unintentionally overshadowed the entire division, not in like a good superstar way, but in a bad, poorly booked way. I thought that having Britt in a very heelish way, so it was obvious what she was trying to say. Cut a promo about how Saraya will never be cleared, and then Saraya getting in the ring and throwing elbows and forearms with Britt was I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it's pretty clear what's going on. The only reason I had any pause at all was just the angle the week before that really didn't accomplish anything positive. But I'm cautiously optimistic at this point. I'm not like particularly jazzed about a Saraya match, but I think it's pretty clear that she is going to have one. And I guess we'll see how that goes.
I'm keeping this at arm's length until we really get a full answer, because this is very weird, to say the least.
I mean, they're basically doing the same thing they did with the return of CM Punk, where you knew that CM Punk was coming back, but they just didn't say it until he actually debuted. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the same kind of deal. They aren't saying that she's cleared, but really they're saying she's cleared.
Yeah.
You know, if she wasn't cleared, she wouldn't be having a little brawl segment with Britt Baker. They want to have a promo where the heel tells you that she will never be cleared, because that's not what a heel would say in that situation. That's a babyface kind of commissioner or Tony Schiavone spot, you know, to mm-hmm. be like, well, actually, we'll never see her actually wrestle. Britt Baker is lying because she's a jerk, and that's the whole character, and that's the whole gimmick. So, I mean, I think it's pretty clear where they're going with this. I'd assume that there's going to be a match between the two on the next pay-per-view, and that this is just part of setting it up. But we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. And as we continue with the news, one thing to report on the Elite and Punk investigation, it's in a holding pattern because someone threatened legal action. There have been some rumors as to who was the one who threatened it, but at this point, we don't really know anything, so we won't speculate on it. It just kind of is what it is at this point. There were some rumors that were kind of floating around wrestling Twitter that the Elite may be showing up on this past week's Dynamite. Obviously, that didn't happen. I still think that the most likely scenario is they are back either at or after Full Gear, but this is all in just this weird holding pattern until something gets figured out.
Yeah, I am kind of, I'm not sure how much I buy the threat of legal action being what will hold it up. I think it's more that they want to make sure everything's in the clear before they move forward with whatever actions they're going to take. Because again, you know, I brought this up before in the past, when it comes to lawsuits, it's really a contest of who has the most money, and you have to misstep pretty egregiously if you're the richer party to really face much in the way of consequences, because you can really drag these things out if you want to. And Tony Khan's the billionaire, and, you know, whichever the talent is actually the one that has threatened legal action, they're, you know, a few zeros behind. So it's a question of, do you actually want to invest the money into this lawsuit? How angry are you, and how much money do you want to spend on that anger? You know, I think it's probably just, you know, that's part of it maybe, but I think most of it is probably just making sure that all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed.
100% agree. As we continue to move on, a couple contract related things. Dan Lambert says it was his decision to leave AEW because he thought he was getting stale. Real territory stuff from Lambert there, which honestly, I kind of agree. He ran his course, and hopefully that means he pops up down the line. But as of right now, it's probably a good thing that he's out of the company. Roosh is AEW full time, which
locker room leader.
Just the cleanest baby face in the world, Roosh. Honestly, I think he's been a great addition to AEW. He's done jobs clean. He has done everything the right way. And he is a different type of wrestler to add to, I'm going to say, eclectic group of wrestlers, just because there's so many different styles on the roster. And that is by no means an insult. It is actually a compliment because the roster is so well-rounded. And Roosh adds a different element because he is a lucha-style brawler who's not going to give you super work-ratey stuff, but he's going to build up matches and they're going to mean something when he's in the process of doing them. And I think that it's great that he's in AEW, and this could lead to some really fun stuff down the line.
Yeah, I like Roosh. He's a good guy to have around, and he can definitely be at that like TNT, you know, title level, as long as it's not elevated up to the main event again, because they like to do that sometimes. But he could have a good program with Wardlow or, you know, is anyone else around that level. And I think he fits in very nicely. Charismatic, can go when he wants to. And frankly, the entire time he's been in there, he's wanted to. So,
absolutely. And another contract related note, Bandido has yet to sign a contract. He did receive a WWE offer, which should come as no surprise after listening to last week's show. But he said he is still expected to sign with AEW, which Bandido on this roster. And obviously we know the history with Bandido and the Elite just because of All Out and how they really tried to showcase him. Albeit it was 4 years ago, but they understood that this guy was a talent and he has kind of really exploded on the scene since then, including being the ROH world champion. I think Bandido on this roster would be great, and I hope that they can secure this deal.
I hope so. I still will maintain my position that it was extremely foolish to not have him, you know, sign a deal before you put him on TV in that spot. I still think that it doesn't sound like it will lead to an issue, but it could, and that's not the kind of issue you want to have pop up, where you basically have promoted this guy at a high level, got him a lot of attention, and whoopsie, he has just jumped off to the competition. But he is apparently in Japan right now, and Per Meltzer did not sign before he went over there.
Yeah, that's one of those things. We'll kind of have to see how it goes, but
it'll probably mean nothing, but man, just if it does, oof, that's going to be a rough one.
Oh, 100%. AEW is currently off Space, which is the TV channel that ran them in Mexico, South and Central America, and the Caribbean. It is still on Space in Brazil, but someone did infer to Dave Meltzer that they were getting a bigger deal. And apparently the announcers allegedly didn't speak Spanish, which considering that pretty much that entire base of your clientele speaks Spanish in South America, it's not exactly logistically a smart thing. So hopefully that this leads to something bigger and better.
Is it Abraham Delgado that has talked about this in the writer Slack some about his displeasure with the quality of their announcing? He has said these exact things before Meltzer mentioned them. I'm not very fluent in Spanish. I'm trying to learn it right now, but I've never actually switched over to the other feed. But outside of when the one guy they had on staff got himself in hot water for I forget exactly what he did to the Spanish announcer that screwed up and lost his job. Do you remember what he said?
Ooh,
was it sexist? Was it something like about how women wrestlers suck? Or I can't remember.
It wasn't good.
Yeah, it was bad. Let's see if I can find that real quick. But yeah, other than that, like that was a rough. You know, Willie Urbina. He did a weird Asian accent deal when Hikaru Shida came out one time. But apparently their Spanish language announcers are not good and don't do a good job of calling it in the language they need to be calling it in. And that's a rough look, man.
No, 100%. Couple other news and notes before we really get into this really fun show. Ruby Soho, we talked about it earlier, did have surgery to correct her broken nose. Who knows how long she'll be out, but the pictures showed that it seemed to be a relatively serious procedure as far as what a broken nose would entail. So all of our best go to her. They set up a GoFundMe for Dennis Bowe, who is an audio technician for AEW, lost his home in Hurricane Ian. Really cool to see how many people donated large sums of money to this individual, including guys like Tony Khan and Chris Jericho. Eddie Kingston pulled out of the Warrior Wrestling Show due to his mother's house flooding from the storm, which really frustrating element from that, because Eddie Kingston was the get right addition to that Warrior Wrestling Show, because they wouldn't allow the Briscoes versus the Lucha Brothers on that show.
Yeah, he was the make good, and then he couldn't make good. So that's unfortunate for everyone involved.
Mm-hmm. And a couple more real quick things. Lee Johnson and Julia Hart are engaged.
Good for both of them.
Yeah. And then Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, and Chris Statlander were on The Floor is Lava on Netflix. So if you want to see something really fun and interesting, considering those three individuals, I would bet that's a hoot of a time.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. I haven't watched it myself yet, but yeah, that is now available to be watched. I know some people were looking forward to that. So,
yeah. Well, Fred, let's get to talking about this show. I'm going to pull up my notes, and we will get this rocking and rolling.
The third-year anniversary?
Yeah, we are now in the fourth year of AEW Dynamite officially. This is also the two-year anniversary of Brody Lee's last match in AEW, which was all over this and Rampage. Overall, I thought this was a really fun show.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. It was a fun show. Several good matches, maybe the only good celebration angle in wrestling history. But overall, very great stuff.
Yeah, and it was nonstop. It was go, 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 go the whole time. And this, they've done a couple small overruns, like a few minutes. This had a 15-minute overrun special for this show. So if you ended up missing a lot of the main event due to that overrun, I apologize. That is never fun. But it did provide for some more action. And we started off with MJF versus Wheeler Yuta, with William Regal joining the broadcast booth. This was MJF's first match since he lost to Wardlow at Double or Nothing, which was 129 days prior. And overall, I thought this was a really good match. MJF worked really well with Yuta. They kind of went back and forth. And then after MJF got the win with the modified Fujiwara armbar they call Soul to the Earth, Stokely Hathaway jumped into the ring, gave him the Dynamite Diamond, and this was really cool because MJF did not look like he wanted to accept it, and he wanted to kind of go the babyface route.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I loved this match. I thought it was great. I went 4.25 on it. Just really great work by both Yuta and MJF here. But I thought that the post-match was kind of weird. You know, it feels like the wrong time to be teasing a MJF babyface turn. I wouldn't really say that, you know, it is the right time to do that, but I liked the match a lot. I thought it was really good. I thought that it showed that MJF can hang. It helped legitimize himself some in the ring. Not that he necessarily needed that, but I mean, as far as a guy that can actually win a match without all kinds of gimmicks and the diamond ring and all that stuff. I thought it came off quite well.
Absolutely. And they did throughout the rest of the show make more mentions of MJF cashing in. So even more speculation on whether this is a red herring or going to be legit. So that discourse is always fun. But one of the cool parts about this show, it continued and continued and continued. It did not let up. There weren't a lot of video packages. We got Darby Allin versus Jay Lethal. And the critical part of this match was Jay Lethal told Satnam Singh and Sanjay Dutt to stay in the back. And they ended up coming out anyway onto that short stage, which we'll end up talking about here. The fact that this venue did not look major league compared to some of the other AEW shows. And Darby ended up getting the win. It's the Last Supper, that pinning combination.
Yes.
And Darby ended up getting Lethal to shake his hand, and it it kind of felt like the beginning potentially of a babyface turn for Lethal.
Yeah, it might be. I feel like that's oddly timed, unless you're bringing back Ring of Honor as an actual separate thing, and in such circumstances trying to position Jay Lethal as like the Ring of Honor original babyface kind of situation. Mm-hmm. But I like this. It was very solid. 3.5 stars, just a good match. I thought it was weird to have the handshake angle right after the MJF Yuta handshake angle. They were really pushing the Ring of Honor stuff hard last night, or hard on the show, I should say. And it's kind of unusual for like the third anniversary of AEW to spend so much time on Ring of Honor, I thought.
Yeah.
Not bad necessarily, just unusual.
But, you know, let's talk about it because who was it?
I know Wade Keller was really bothered by it.
That's who. Wade Keller said specifically mentioned that AEW mentioned ROH, I think, what was it, 64 times and during the show. I'm like, look.
Breaking out the tally marks.
Yeah, and you know what? This is incredibly stupid because, one, Wade Keller is a smart guy. He understands the wrestling business. So why does he not understand that every wrestling's canon is AEW's canon, and ROH doesn't have TV right now, so Tony Khan is promoting his other promotion on his main show while intermingling the storylines. Like, it's really simple, yet Keller just seems to want to be negative about AEW like he thinks he's Mike Tenay.
There's a situation with AEW. It's kind of funny. I mean, first of all, I know that we're doing an AEW podcast. I know that I'm generally quite positive about the promotion, but that's not to say that there are not things to criticize about it. And it doesn't even have to be like big things like the Soraya, mishap of two episodes ago, but just small week to week things you can nitpick and point at. But it feels like that people just can't criticize AEW like normally. Like, it has to be this, not only is it bad, but it's actively killing the company and they're all going to die and it's really bad and you should feel bad for liking it kind of stuff. And it's kind of a AEW derangement syndrome of sorts. Like, you just can't leave it at, I thought that the booking on this was weird or bad. Like, you have to elevate it to some really disastrous level that it isn't deserved. You know, because I don't think there's any real sign that, like, you know, the giant air quotes here, casual fans tuned in to watch Dynamite were like, oh, there's all these mentions of Ring of Honor and I can't handle it mentally. Like, my brain is just melting right now. They hit, you know, they're still, their TV ratings are great. Their ticket sales are down. That's a separate issue. Eventually it may bleed into the TV ratings, which would be a major point of concern. But, you know, it's just very weird to me. There was another fairly high profile guy, and, you know, this isn't like even the Eric Bischoff guys type that have, you know, that are either financially tied to the company that AEW is trying to compete against, like, you know, Road Dogg and Booker T. But there's, you know, the Eric Bischoff's the type that have figured out that if they talk bad about AEW, they will get a lot of attention from a certain segment of the online wrestling fandom and financially benefit from that. But even the people, you know, the people like Keller that don't have that kind of situation, they like to just amplify everything, I feel like, out of proportion. And for example, another thing, Dave Meltzer does this a little bit. He's not as bad as Keller, but Meltzer will like constantly bring up, oh, they have so much talent there. You know, I think that it's they shouldn't be signing people. But when, you know, Triple H brings back everyone that ever spent a minute in the NXT ring over the past decade, you know, that isn't criticized the same way. Even though the WWE roster is similarly stacked. It feels like that there's just some of these same criticisms aren't being applied all around to other companies, and it's unusual.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
If you're talking, Tyler, you're on mute.
Hey, I did it again. Oh, I am so talented, Fred. We're going to leave that in there just because it's funny and I deserve to be buried. I think you mentioned it earlier, and if you didn't, I was thinking it. It's the WWE derangement syndrome, where everything that WWE does is right, and if it's different, it's wrong. And so much of this has been implemented in our brains because WWE was the main form of American wrestling over the last 20 years. And it's tough because it's okay to be different. It's okay to try something new. And you can have great wrestling presented in a different style. Just look at worldwide. Like, Lucha, Japan, and even just within Japan, there's multiple different types of wrestling. There's deathmatch, there's work rate, there's like dramatic performance. Like, it's okay to be different. You don't have to be within the context of one script, one style. Like, just look at like football. How many different types of offenses and defenses are successful? You don't have to do it in one specific way in order to be good. And
Within football, like on college football in particular, when you watch a game on Fox, it's a different experience than on ABC or ESPN, than a different experience from NBC, how they do it. You know, there's different ways to present wrestling just as a television project or product, I should say. Mm-hmm. And you know, AEW shoots things differently. They don't script everything. And, you know, I would say, you know, that the lack of scripting has been overall a large positive for them. Is it fair to say that there have been people that haven't benefited from the lack of scripting? Yeah, sure. You know, there are probably people that would have done better if they had someone script their promos for them. But at the same time, I don't think you would have had as excellent promos from all these great, you know, talkers on the AEW roster, whether it be Moxley, CM Punk, you know, going on to MJF, all these guys. I think even Jack Perry probably does better with unscripted than scripted, just from what I've seen of him. That's just my guess. And I wouldn't really qualify him as even a good promo on an average day. Having more creative freedom typically plays out well, I think, for your average high-level wrestler. But like the idea that you can't talk about Ring of Honor when it's already integrated into AEW is kind of absurd. I mean, it is absurd. It's not kind of. I mean, they're working it into the show itself. I don't see anything wrong with that.
I don't see anything wrong with it either. And it bothers me that there are so many people that think that it can only be one way.
And the people that are arguing that are basically showing their ass. I mean, when I hear that, like, it makes it hard for me to take any of your actual criticism seriously. And again, I will repeat, and I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. There are things about AEW I don't like. There are things about AEW I wish they would change. But I think relatively speaking to, you know, WWE, where I feel like it's very shallow and unrealistic, you know, I think that AEW does a better job overall. That's my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that, like, nothing is good in WWE. I just, you know, prefer the AEW style better overall. But I don't know. It's, you know, there's a lot of goodwill to WWE because they're the bigger company. And they've been around for so long. So obviously, if they're doing something wrong, they would suffer, I guess, would be the point of view on it. But that's not really borne out by, you know, essentially what has been a near monopoly of the market that they've had for decades.
Yeah, 100%. This company is overall not good, and it just, the brainworms that it gets with some people just drives me up a wall. But what also drove me up a wall, we got Prince Nana on TV, Fred.
Yeah,
Prince Nana, that
was the money.
Like, I love it. Just the little things that this company does to bring back and appreciate the history of wrestling is great. And he obviously came out with the Machine Brian Cage versus Mr. Mayhem Wardlow in the TNT title match. And I got to say, this was just a fun hoss fight, just doing a bunch of moves and kicking the living crap out of each other. And then you got the four powerbomb symphony from Wardlow to finish off Cage. I thought this was a really good 3.5-star match. Nothing real special. Just two dudes beating each other up.
Yeah, I had a blast with it. I thought it was a very special match. It was kind of like a modern version of the big guys hitting each other. You know, the beef, you know, big beefy men slapping meat, Biggie quote, only with extra flips thrown in because it's 2022 and that's how people work. I think Brian Cage, I don't know if Brian Cage is a good wrestler or not. That's something I've kind of struggled with for ever since I first saw him on a PWG DVD like 7 years ago. He has some stuff that he's really good at, and he has some stuff that he's not so good at. But the way I would describe Brian Cage to someone that had never seen him before is imagine that you have your SmackDown Here Comes the Pain creator wrestler maxed out, and also have unlocked all the cool moves and just assigned them all. And that is the Brian Cage experience. Like, he just, his approach to wrestling is just, I will do cool shit, and then once I've done some cool shit, I will do some more cool shit.
He's a guy that you feel like should be a world champion everywhere. And then when you watch him wrestle, it feels like he's wrestling in slow motion, but in a bad way. Like,
it's sometimes, yeah. I don't know that he has like the win to be like a single star, you know, the stamina. And I feel like sometimes he tries to do stuff and it doesn't work out as well as he hoped it would. I kind of think his best spot would be like the muscle in a heel tag team or trio spot. And hopefully we'll get to see that from him some in the, especially with the new trios division. But I think he might slot in well there. You know, just have him come in for 5 minutes, be a bully, do some cool stuff, and then tag back out.
Yeah, I agree. I think that'd be a lot of fun. After the match, the Gates of Agony rushed the ring to punish Wardlow, and then Samoa Joe sprinted down. The Embassy did have the numbers, but FTR's music hits, and looks like we're setting up FTR versus the Gates of Agony, which actually happened on the Battle of the Belts show.
It did.
And look, this is just really good stuff. FTR said at the Royal Quest show, hey, Tony Khan, book us. And he did.
They got a show, and they got to do a match, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
And Britt Baker had a pre-tape. Saraya will not be competing in AEW. Doctors have not cleared her to compete, so I guess that makes this my house now. And then that led into the trios match, which was AEW Inter Women's World Champion Toni Storm, Athena, and Willow Nightingale with Saraya in their corner. Versus Jamie Hayter, Penelope Ford, and Serena Deeb with Dr. Britt Baker in their corner. This was fine, but I think the most important part of this match was, one, Nightingale got the win.
Yes.
And then you had Britt Baker come in. They were starting to kick everybody's ass, and then Saraya ended up getting physical. And I think those were the two most important parts of this match. The wrestling itself was fine. I really like Willow Nightingale, and I think she has a future, especially as like a plucky baby face. But those two things were what I really took away from this match.
Yeah, those are the two big takeaways. I actually liked this match quite a bit and thought it was the best women's match in a couple weeks at least. I thought everyone looked good and had their working shoes on, and for the, you know, practically everything was landed well. So I thought it turned out quite well in that regard. Willow Nightingale, you know, my wife made this comparison first. She really reminds me of like NXT era Bayley, the super bubbly.
I like that.
Yeah, she's got so much charisma. She just feels like a natural babyface star. And she's really been winning over the crowd with every appearance over the past few weeks. I'm very optimistic about this. I really hope they keep pushing her. I've been saying this, I think, ever since we started the show, basically. I think she is a potential star if they handle her right, which basically would amount to like not, you know, having her be a jobber at this point. But I think she can definitely be something for them and help out the division.
I 100% agree. And like, she has a different look compared to a lot of the division. And I think that can really be a huge benefit for her, because you do like to have variety,
both
in your men's and women's divisions. And she just provides a different look and energy than the rest of the locker room, and I think that that needs to be a focus.
She feels extremely organic when she's on the camera, just like a natural baby face. I'm all in on her.
Absolutely agree, and I am all in on her too. And now comes the best part of the show, National Scissoring Day. And this was just as ludicrous and ridiculous as you could think it is. Billy ended up gifting them a giant gold pair of scissors because it was National Scissoring Day. It just awesome stuff.
Great stuff. Just a complete goofball segment. We had Mark Sterling come out and be a complete geek, which he's great at being. We had Swerve come out and try to ruin the party. But, of course, you know, the love of scissoring in the nation's capital is just too much for them to overcome. And then they drop the scissor leg drop on Sterling. He's still walking gingerly when it comes to Rampage a couple days later. But yeah, I thought this was a really fun segment. And I thought everyone came off looking good in it.
Mm-hmm. Tony Schiavone was then backstage with Madison Rayne and Sky Blue. And that set up a tag team match for Rampage with Anna Jay and Tay Mello. And we will talk about that in a little bit. You're going to have to lead us through this one, Fred, because I had some issues with my Hulu TV when I was watching Hangman Page versus Roosh. What I saw was pretty good, but I had a lot of internet issues, so I did miss a good amount of it. Why don't you help us through?
Well, I liked this match pretty well. It was solid. It wasn't like a go-out-of-your-way kind of thing. I went 3.5 stars on it. But both Paige and Roosh put on a good, solid performance, and it was a good TV match. I'm not going to like remember this too much at the end of the year or anything, but you know, it was enjoyable for what it was. And, of course, it continued to push the Private Party split from, air quotes, the Andrade family office. We'll see how that goes moving forward. But you know, and earlier in the show, they had pushed their issues with Jose the Assistant and Roosh. But yeah, this was a good match. Afterwards, Mox came out and cut a face-to-face promo with Adam Page, which was shockingly quite good. It may surprise you, Tyler, but Jon Moxley is good at talking about pro wrestling to hype matches.
Big news.
I know. And then Page basically challenged him right there, right then, and Mox said, "Hey, I like you, but I'm going to let that slide." So they're still building towards Cincinnati, and this was a very solid segment.
Yes, absolutely. And then we did get, after Willow Nightingale's big win, she said at Battle of the Belts, "I want a challenge for the TBS title." Jade and the Baddies crashed the interview with Tony Schiavone, and Willow said that Jade can't win forever, which it's going to happen at some point. Jade is going to lose the belt, and I think this is just the beginning of that seed.
Well, that's I think this definitely pushed it some and made it feel like that would be, you know, I think we're getting towards the tail end of Jade's run with that championship, and I kind of wonder if it's going to be Willow that'll take it off her, given all of her, you know, basically her rise up the card and this promo and then the subsequent match. Where she got some good near win spots. But all in all, yeah, I thought this was a solid segment.
100%. And then as we kind of continue on, we had Luchasaurus with Christian Cage taking on Fuego del Sol. It was a squash, but the big thing was Jungle Boy ran down the ring and cracked Luchasaurus with the chair. And he said, "Look at me. You were my best friend in the entire world. After everything we've been through together, you chose him and you broke my heart. But now I'm going to break your fingers. I'm going to break your nose. I'm going to break your arm. I'm going to break you piece by miserable piece until I break you. You pick the time and you pick the place. I'll be ready." And it sounds like that's going to happen in Toronto next Wednesday. Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus, because Christian Cage is still on the shelf. This could be good.
Yeah, I think the match could be good. I'm very interested. I think it's very interesting that they are doing that in Toronto with Christian affiliated with Luchasaurus in their Canadian debut. I feel like that's a recipe for the crowd to turn on Jungle Boy. And I'm not really sure that's what they want to happen. But, you know, I guess we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that could be very interesting. And then we got to our overrun match, which was the ROH Pure Champion Daniel Garcia and the American Dragon Bryan Danielson. And it was worth noting that Daniel Garcia did come out of the face tunnel, not the heel tunnel, and versus ROH World Champion, the Ocho, Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara. This was a very good match. I thought it was noteworthy that at the end, that Sammy ended up getting the win. There was a cheating spot, and I just cannot remember, and I can't find it in my notes where the cheating spot was.
Jericho did a belt shot.
It was a belt shot, and Sammy ended up covering Garcia and got the win, which anytime Sammy was doing anything just got massive, massive heat.
Yeah, now I don't know if Sammy's heat came from the thing with Andrade or just from Sammy being Sammy and also kind of being gross with Tay Conti in the real bunch of PDA kind of way. We've seen before that, like, sometimes the AEW crowd is up on what has happened, you know, backstage and got reported, and then sometimes they aren't. Like, again, the easy example is a few weeks ago when Max Caster referenced the talent meeting after the CM Punk fallout backstage, and no one reacted in the crowd, you know, when right when the Acclaimed were at like their peak as a hot act. So There's only so much that they do know about, but I also feel like, you know, maybe some of them did know about it and told people around them, but also I think you don't need that for Sammy to be pretty well hated. I mean, and he's just a good heel. Like, that's another thing with him, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he's kind of a dipshit, but he's also good at being a pro wrestling dipshit as a character. So.
Yeah, 1,000% agree.
I love this match. I thought it was a lot of fun. I went 4.5 stars on it. I thought it was definitely worth your time to go out of your way to watch. Daniel Garcia, it keeps, you know, putting on great performances and is obviously going to be a star in the future. I mean, hell, he's already halfway to being a star right now. Jericho and Danielson are total pros, and Sammy Guevara had a good match too. So
I really feel like they're going to strap the rocket to Daniel Garcia, especially once they end up finishing the stuff with Jericho as far as the quote unquote official turn. Cause we haven't seen anything truly official yet. Cause I think they're going to have that moment here soon, and that's really going to take hold, and he's going to get the rocket.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that he's got the talent, and just this whole year, he's been just building up perfectly as a top star. So. Absolutely. That does it for Dynamite.
Yes, and then we have Rampage, which started off.
Rampage, baby.
It's Friday night. You know what that means. Claudio Castagnoli, Wheeler Yuta, and AEW World Champion John Moxley, the Blackpool Combat Club versus La Facción Ingobernables, Rush, Isaiah Cassidy, and Mark Quinn. It's a fun match. A lot of fun spots. You had Yuta hitting a frog splash to the outside on that weird stage, which they had set up for a second consecutive show. And then Yuta ended up getting the pin.
Yeah, it was a very solid match. Do you want to talk about the building they were in and the setup they used and everything here?
Yeah, let's do that. Because I understand
it looks kind of shitty.
TV sales have not necessarily been great. They only got 3,100, I think, for Dynamite. I do not have the Rampage number in front of me. It looked very Bush League. And when they're at Daly's place, it doesn't look very Bush League because there is an element of, hey, there's not a lot of space in this venue because it's an amphitheater. So everything is back and up. Then you just kind of have that understanding, especially when they show the whole crowd and how the building lays out. This was a basketball arena, and it had that same feel. But instead of feeling like, hey, this is just a unique venue, just felt really Bush League and crap. I understand that you're not going to be able to sell 10,000 tickets to every single show, especially with where this company is at and how many people have just been going to things and things and things, and they're really spamming markets a little too much at this point.
Yeah, they need to start hitting other cities.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to fill up basketball arenas. That's fine. But if you know you're not going to be able to make them, you have to be able to figure out how to make them look better. And quite frankly, this looked like shit.
Yeah, it was rough, man. And, you know, the most recent update I'm seeing on WrestleTix, which is a great service if you care about these kind of numbers, is that as of Thursday morning, Rampage had, let's see here, 2,200 tickets distributed. Granted, they still had about 36 hours to, you know, the actual showtime, but still, that's not a great number. But it was only set up for 3,700.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Like, it's just frustrating, and I think this is something that Tony Khan's going to figure out as time goes on. Like, you have to make your setup look major league, even if you're not going to get the ticket sales. Like, hey, like when they go to Texas, they run the Curtis Caldwell Center. It's what, like 5,000?
Yeah.
But because of how the building lays out, they still make it look like a major league venue. Like, you can spice things up a little bit. Like, I'll never forget when I went to the G1 show in Dallas and they ran the American Airlines Center, which we all know that they got a hell of a deal, and New Japan really didn't care about tenting stuff off. Like, the optics on TV looked like crap. In a building, it was fine. Nobody cared. It was great. You were just focused on the wrestling, and it was very loud considering. But if you all know you're going to only have like 3,000-4,000 people, why are you running a basketball arena? Like, maybe find something different.
Yeah. Now, granted, this is the smaller Washington, D.C. basketball arena. It is the home of the Washington Mystics, of the WNBA, and the G League team, the Capital City Go-Go. What a name. But it's there is on site a practice facility for the Wizards, but the Wizards, of course, play in a different arena. So this isn't like some massive building. In fact, let me pull up Wikipedia for there. The detailed capacity on it for concerts and basketball games is just over 4,100. So it's not like they had it set up for really much less than that. There were 400 seats lost between the two, roughly. So that's probably just the TV setup with the stage and everything. But still, you know, that's still a small building. That's, you know, probably not what you want for you, especially if you're an anniversary show.
Yeah. Just not great stuff. And as we kind of continue on with this show, we had essentially a squash here with Josh Woods and Tony Nese defeating the Varsity Blondes. Arn Anderson was watching on a monitor backstage, which could place something down the line. But the real important thing at the end was Smart Mark Sterling entered the ring, and he trademarked the term varsity in professional wrestling, and he's giving it to Nese and Woods and calling them the varsity athletes. And they got interrupted by the Acclaimed and forced them to retreat. And it looks like we may be getting a small program with the Acclaimed and the varsity athletes, which could be a really fun TV title match.
Yeah, I like this Nese and Woods team. I wouldn't let them stiff a belt anytime soon, but they're perfectly serviceable heel mid-card tag team. You know, they're very good at what they do. I don't see them being any higher up the card really at any point in time, but I think that they work well as a tag team, and it's nice to see them, you know, be, you know, officially a tag team, if you will, like actually have matching gear and the team name and everything. So I'm I'm fairly happy about, you know, that.
And as you should be, Fred. The next one was Madison Rayne and Sky Blue versus Anna Jas and Tay Mello. Look,
it was a match.
We've talked about Madison Rayne looking really, really bad in this company. This, like, her left-handed, like, forearm shots looked kind of funky. Like, but outside of that, this was fine. This was like a gentleman's three. It was good. It wasn't egregious. It didn't make me want to rip my eyes out because they were botching stuff. It was fine.
Yeah, I just went a solid 2 stars on this, but this was just a very average match for me, which is not a bad thing, you know, especially with Raid and Sky Blue as one of the teams. You know, I don't have anything bad to say about it. It was just a complete total match.
Yeah. It existed in the context of the show, but the best match of the night before we got to Battle of the Belts was Death Triangle defeating Dark Order. And what was really interesting is Roosh came out, handed Pac the hammer that he I can't remember who he used on. I think he used on Orange Cassidy the week prior to retain the All-Atlantic title. Knocked Reynolds out and then had him in the Brutalizer, and Reynolds was still out. And then he ended up picking the win up before Rampage. And I thought that was really interesting because obviously we know that La Facción Ingobernable is trying to get 10 over. Jose the Assistant ended up giving 10 an envelope. And that's when Rush ended up giving the hammer to Pac. It was a very interesting element to this whole story, because now you kind of have Pac and Death Triangle in cahoots with Rush. How is that going to play in? Or is this just another thing for 10? And it just happens the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Like, it was a very weird finish to the match that is going to have some consequences down the line.
Yeah, and I think that it's it could set up several things, I think. I'm not saying all these will happen. It could potentially lead to a split of the Death Triangle. Not that I necessarily want that, mind you. But, you know, Pac is definitely working as a heel while the Lucha Bros are total baby faces so far. It could lead to future finishes with Pac. You know, one assumes that he'll be facing Orange Cassidy again in a rematch. Then for that match, you could have Pac win with another hammer shot. You could have Orange Cassidy, you know, do a reversal of fortune and get the hammer shot himself. Or you could even have Orange Cassidy pick up the win with the hammer shot and then have a dusty finish where, if you remember, like 2 weeks ago, there was Tony Khan made a big deal about how, you know, Paul Turner is going to help crack down on cheating. And then they promptly stopped doing that. But they could always just have a second referee come out and do the babyface actually used a hammer, so the heel should win and keep the belt kind of deal. I don't know. It opens up several things, and you know, maybe the Dark Order will lose Preston Vance to you know, the Rush stable, I guess now it is, without Andrade around. Could potentially fill a bigger role there. I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts with these groups, and it's kind of interesting right now.
Very interesting. And I'm really excited to kind of see how things go. And then next we have the Battle of the Belts 4, which on paper, you could argue that this was the strongest Battle of the Belts.
Yeah, it had a very solid card. Some of the previous ones have had, like, even sub-Rampage cards, which kind of, to me, undermined the point of Battle of the Belts. But I thought this one was quite enjoyable. You could make the argument that Pac versus Trent was the best match of the week for AEW. I personally would have went with the Dynamite Tag main event. But I liked it a lot. I went 4.25 on it. Just Pac and Trent just working really hard. Pac had a hell of a night with 2 straight matches for basically 40 minutes and just, you know, got through both of them like a pro, put on great performances. There was a spot where Trent did a half and a half suplex off the turnbuckle, which was just wild to see Pac take. And that was a hell of a bump. And yeah, I liked this quite a bit.
Yeah, unfortunately, I was unable to get Battle of the Belts because I had more Hulu TV issues, which that will not happen after this week because they are done in my house.
Well, let me take the lead on this for you then. So after that, the Jericho and 2.0 promo, which was quite solid, really good. They're great together. They cut a promo on Daniel Garcia primarily and talked about how, you know, Jericho knows that, you know, you want to branch out on your own, but he's going to find out that he's not ready and that he needs to come back home to the Jericho Appreciation Society. So they're still building doubt that Daniel Garcia will stick with them and stay a heel. And then, of course, he hyped the match with Bryan Danielson and said that he would be fighting Bryan Danielson not as the Wizard or the Ocho or any other nickname, but as the Lionheart. So I hope you're ready for those yellow trunks to make a comeback.
Just give me White Zombie, because that's really what matters here.
Jade Cargill and Willow Nightingale followed up. I thought this was, for a Jade match, was on the Jade scale, it was probably like a 4.5 star classic. I went 2.75 stars on it, to be clear. But for Jade, that's like 4.5 stars, just because of where she is in her career. Willow looked great in this. They worked some really cool spots that showed off both Jade's power and Willow's just her charisma and her, you know, she does that really cool body block with her opponent on the ground. And they teased really hard that Willow was going to win with a near fall, and then Jade got the Jaded immediately for the win. And then after the match, Nyla Rose and Vicky Guerrero came out. Vicky distracted Jade, and Nyla Rose stole the title belt and ran off. So that was an angle that occurred on television. Then there is another angle that occurred on television where Ethan Page and Stokely Hathaway were confronted by Matt Hardy, who told them to stay out of their business or his business. And they're like, yeah, you're okay. We will. Also, you shouldn't contract tamper. We're talking about real life things through angles. Wrestling. It was fine. Hook tore up the Trustbusters envelope. That was the entire segment that he did. And then we had the Gates of Agony versus FTR. This was a solid match. You can see some promise with Bishop Khan and... is the other guy Moses? Is that right?
I think so, yes.
They're both, Toa Leona, I think it was. They are promising. You can definitely see why Tony Khan wants to get them some run and some experience. They're big. They move well. I think Khan in particular looks like $1 million. But this was, not up to the usual standard of an FTR match. If you're hoping for something high in the 4-star range, flirting with 5, this definitely wasn't what this was. This was just a solid 12-15 minute TV match that FTR ended up winning. And then we had a kind of a repeat of the previous angle involving these guys where Brian Cage came out and then Wardlow came out. But oh no, the heels had the numbers and the advantage. And then Samoa Joe came out and ran off the heels. And that was the show. So Battle of the Belts was solid, perfectly acceptable. Make sure you watch the Trent Pac match. I would push that one pretty hard. And there you go. That was the show.
Hey. Fun stuff. Honestly, AEW is just kind of on a roll right now as far as continuing to deliver work rate style matches. And I am a fan of that. And I always will be. Not a whole lot to go throughout the rest as far as YouTube shows, not really anything going. But we do have a listener question. And remember, if you have any questions for us, you can either DM myself at TheRealForno on Twitter. You can DM the show Twitter account, GoodBadHungy, or you can drop them in the Voice of Wrestling Discord, where we have our own channel called The Good, The Bad, The Hungy under the VOW Podcast Network line. Freaking JGM asked, why do you think AEW has not fixed all of its audio problems? And Fred, you and I were kind of talking about this pre-show, and I'll let you take the lead here. Because the one that we really came to a conclusion that was really bad was Grand Slam.
Yeah, especially the taped aspect of it, because that was when the Great Muta made his, let's be generous and call it a run-in, his walk to the ring, which granted, I'm not going to crap on that. Like, is the Great Muta doing a run in the U.S.? That itself is pretty cool. Apparently it got a pretty big pop in the building, and then when you watched it on TV, I was like, oh my God, did the Great Muta just die in front of a crowd?
It sounded like nothing.
Yeah, like no one cared. I don't think that they're so bad with their live shows when it comes to the audio stuff, but what they're really bad at sometimes, and it's very inconsistent, is the most maddening thing, is they can't seem to get their audio levels right on their pre-tape shows. Either it sounds like it's the old SmackDown vacuum cleaner, crowd where they're, adding in cheers, or else they just completely managed to deflate the crowd noise completely. It's very odd sometimes, and I don't know why that is, but I TV production is hard, I guess would be my answer. You would hope they'd have it figured out, but I can understand why sometimes there's issues just because it's live, or well, not live, but TV, just to repeat, is hard. But it's kind of surprising that it's such a consistent issue, but at least it's been a couple years since they had the audio from an NBA game completely broadcast over a match. So,
I remember that. That was hilarious in all the worst ways. Yeah. They should figure it out. And obviously we're not going to expect perfection all the time, but considering that we're now over 3 years into this company beginning with Double or Nothing back in May of 2019, you think that some of these issues would have been ironed out by now, and it's very frustrating that they haven't.
Yeah, because it's not, when you watch something like the NBA on Turner, where it is live always. They at least managed to have consistent audio levels. So, you know, it's, you know, people like to say AEW is filling in for WCW what they were back in the 90s. WCW had their fair share of technical issues back then. So it's just, you know, another round of a wrestling promotion on Turner, you know, having issues with getting their audio set up correct.
Moving forward, Fred, I think the biggest storyline outside of potential return of both the Elite and CM Punk is Chris Jericho, the Ocho. He is determined to run through all of the past Ring of Honor champions, but the first one he has is Bryan Danielson. Now, the two of them are 1-1 in singles competition. Does Chris Jericho retain the belt against Bryan Danielson and kind of continue that storyline, or does Bryan Danielson gain the Ring of Honor world title? Because either one of them makes total sense to be leading into a potential new television deal, which when Jericho ended up winning the belt from Claudio Castagnoli, that was kind of what we anticipated, was we would be getting a television deal and Jericho would be leading the charge to kind of lend some credence to the promotion as far as advertisers. Danielson could do the same thing if he won the belt, especially with his history with Ring of Honor. How do you foresee that one going this upcoming Wednesday?
To me, it's pretty clear to me that Jericho is going to end up winning, probably by cheating, because the whole storyline is that Jericho is a jerk and he doesn't respect Ring of Honor, the promotion that was built around handshakes and role following. And so he's just following the heel formula for that promotion, and he's probably going to do a belt shot or low blow or something and get a cheap pin on Danielson. I think it's way too soon to move the belt off him. I think he's doing he's just fit in perfectly in the spot he is with this with the Ring of Honor title, and I wouldn't move it. I would keep it on him. We also have on Dynamite announced so far Pac defending the All-Atlantic title against Orange Cassidy, so we may see the comeback of the hammer spot. It'll be interesting to watch that. We already mentioned Jungle Boy versus Luchasaurus with Christian Cage in the large dinosaur's corner. And then women's tag match of Toni Storm and Hikaru Shida against Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. And then a real TEW match where you advance 2 years into the future. We have Swerve Strickland against Billy Gunn. A main event in any building.
Hey,
what a random match.
I will be excited about that match because, look, Billy Gunn is a competent worker at this point. He's not going to deliver great matches, but when you have him as a base for the kind of stuff Swerve Strickland can deliver, that could be a lot of fun.
And it's an easy win for Strickland to get in this feud without derailing the Acclaim's momentum. So I get it. I'm just not real excited for it.
Yeah, it's this first show in Canada being is going to be very interesting, and I wouldn't be shocked if Tony Khan has an ace up his sleeve. Fred, before we get out of here, have you watched anything else on your backlog? I know you were talking about the G1 last week, and I want to know, have you gotten to the Juice El Phantasmo match?
I have not got to that yet, but what I did was I took a break from the G1 and I pulled out physical media. Ooh. And I watched PWG from this year. Because I'm very good at following dates and directions, I watched the show that came after the Battle of Los Angeles, which I'm forgetting the name of right now. But it was, I mean, it was very solid all around, delivering the goods. And I also watched the first day of Ebola and got like two matches into the second day of Ebola. The things that I would say you have to go out of your way to watch. Because, you know, PWG isn't exactly what it was 3 years ago in terms of people paying attention to it or anything. But make sure you watch Bandito versus Speedball Mike Bailey from the first day of Battle of Los Angeles. I thought that was a fantastic match with 4¾ stars on it. There was also a Biff Busick's Mike Bailey match from Delivering the Goods that I went 4.5 on. Unfortunately, Biff Busick has returned to WWE as a coach full time. So he was teasing a match with Super Dragon that I guess we will never see.
Wait. That's full time now? Because at one point he was just a guest coach. And
I thought Meltzer said that Biff Busick is now only lurking his wares there full time. But that was the impression I was under. I do know the guest coaching thing, but I thought that I saw that he was there full time. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. I don't have anything pulled up in front of me. So if I'm wrong, you know, sorry, my bad. I'm an idiot as always. And then we also had two other matches. I'll go ahead on my way to mention day one of Battle of Los Angeles, Blake Christian versus Wheeler Yuta was a really good kind of technical based match. And then Delivering the Goods had a great Aramis versus Konosuke Takeshita match, which I will say also opened with one of the worst botches you might see this year, and then immediately turned into a great match. So I went 4.25 stars on both of those.
It's nice to be able to watch PWG because I understand kind of their business model and they don't really need to go bigger, but yeah, I wish they would. I wish they would. It'd be so much fun to watch it in real time.
Okay, so here we go. In the newsletter, Meltzer said there were stories about Oney Lorcan, parentheses, Chris Gerard, 36. I love that he still does that stuff. In parentheses, working as a guest coach this week at the Performance Center. When asked about it, we were told he's not a guest coach and has been there for a while as a full-time coach.
There we go.
So I think that's unfortunate, but if Oney's getting paid without taking bumps, that's a good thing for him. So,
yeah, it just stinks because there would have been a litany of matches that he could have had on the indies that just would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And even AEW, just look, like he and Buddy Matthews could have been using the same role. Like, hey, just put this guy on TV, let him do some cool shit for 15 minutes and then lose. And yeah, who cares? Just go do cool shit.
Did you get to watch any wrestling this past week outside of the AEW stuff, Tyler?
Oh, I unfortunately did not. I'm looking at watching the New Japan show from this morning here this week. Football, it's football season, and football kind of consumes my life with everything I have to do with college football handicapping and managing it, the Vikings wire for USA Today. So wrestling is not something I'm able to get a lot of, but I'm trying to get in a better flow of things with the puppy so then I can make some time for some backlog stuff.
Then I gotta ask you, what was the dumbest thing in football this past weekend?
Oh god. College football is so incredibly dumb. I'm gonna probably go with Jimbo Fisher calling an absolutely atrocious play call on first and goal from the 2 with 3 seconds left to beat Alabama. And he didn't run any kind of motion. He didn't try any kind of misdirection, try to scheme a guy open. He's just like, hey, I'm going to run this like this whip route on the far side, and you're going to throw there. And it's just going to be like, hey, just beat him. Like, just utterly abysmal play call. That was probably the dumbest thing I saw this week. But as there always is, there is some dumb stuff, and Sicko's committee on Twitter finds all the dumb stuff. It's great. Michael Penix Jr. from Washington threw a pick six by hitting his offensive lineman in the helmet with the football, and it's skied up. Like, there's a lot of really stupid stuff in the world of football, and those are probably the two. But man, you could look around and find some pretty good stuff. Just go to Sicko's committee, and you'll see it all.
Speaking of social media, you can follow the podcast at Good Bad Hungy, HUNGEE, and that's 2 E's. I forget how many I said. I'm very tired right now. Nick Khan would be disappointed in me for mentioning that. You can also email us at HungyPod, HUNGEEPOD, at gmail.com if you have any questions or comments. Please rate and review us on your platforms and subscribe, and otherwise just support us. We appreciate you taking the time to listen, and I think that's it for us this week, Tyler.
It is, and yeah, here's to another great week of AEW Dynamite. Have a good one. Take care.
Take it easy.